I know you'll help her. Blake leaned forward to kiss me, and I almost let him. For an instant, all the old feelings roared to life, and I was ready to forget Cyrus and adore Blake and only Blake. Then the memory of Cyrus's warm skin against mine as we danced beside the fire ghosted through my mind. I turned my face away, denying Blake's kiss, and hated myself for the hurt and confusion that furrowed his brow. Sorry, I told him. I have to concentrate.
I'll leave you alone.
He looked back over his shoulder at me as he walked away, the pain of rejection still in his eyes, reminding me of how Cyrus had looked as I'd driven away from Eclipse. I covered my face with my hands. Shit, I said under my breath. Shit, shit, shit. Nearby I could hear the low gurgle of the river. Normally I found the sound of the river soothing, but not today. What could I call to heal Aaron? I didn't want to destroy any more of the forest. That would attract suspicion. But I needed something potent, something sentient. Taking deep breaths to calm myself, I glanced around and saw a small pile of river stones and realized I had unconsciously guided us to the place where I'd buried Aaron's cat and its litter so many years ago. Would the anima of a living cat be enough to heal Aaron now? I wondered, and then felt guilty for thinking it. I didn't want to cull a cat or a dog or any other creature. But what choice did I have?
Are you going to fix me again?
Aaron asked, startling me from my thoughts. I looked down to find Aaron's eyes were open, gazing up at me.
Is that why we're out here? She said.
I smoothed her hair off her forehead. Her hair had thinned again, her scalp showing through.
That's the plan.
She frowned.
Is it safe for you?
I nodded and forced a reassuring smile that I didn't feel.
Don't worry about me. I know how to stay in control now.
Her eyes moved across my face as though she were reading a map.
You're different, Kenna.
I couldn't meet her gaze.
A little, yeah.
A lot, she said, sounding troubled.
But you look beautiful.
I couldn't miss the note of disdain in her voice, and guilt wrenched at my heart. A lot of people don't know this, but twins often balance each other out. When one is up, the other is down. When one is rebellious, the other tends to be obedient. When one is sick, the other becomes healthy. While I was away at Eclipse becoming the ultimate version of myself, Aaron had been at home, withering with illness.
Do you know why I'm sick again? Aaron asked.
She'd always been better at reading my mind than I was at reading hers.
I guess the fix wasn't permanent.
I remembered what the dead version of Aaron had said to me during my bad trip the other night. Nothing lasts forever. Not death and not life. My sister's gaze moved to stare past my shoulder, and she murmured,
"All that lives must die, passing through nature to eternity."
"What did you say?" I asked sharply, chills dotting my spine.
"It's a line from Hamlet," Aaron said. "It's what Gertrude tells Hamlet when his father dies."
Her eyes darkened behind her cracked glasses.
"I've told you that line before, remember?"
And then I did. She had quoted it to me when she'd come close to dying. My mind had retained the meaning of the quote, but not the exact words, and had tormented me with it during my bad trip on the Midnight Glory.
"I remember," I said, nodding.
"You're about 1,000 times smarter than me, you know that?"
"That's because all I could ever do without hurting myself was sit in the house and read."
Her eyes drifted past me and she sighed.
"That time in the hospital, when I asked you to say goodbye to me."
I swallowed hard, choking on emotion. "I couldn't do it. I still can't." She nodded as though we agreed on this.
"I don't want to go back to the way I was," she said. "I know this sounds terrible, but I think I'd rather die than do that."
Her eyes grew watery.
"You want to hear something ironic?"
"Sure."
"Before I died, I wasn't afraid to die. I hated my body for being so frail. I wanted out of it. It was a prison. But then you brought me back and gave me a new body. And while you were gone, I tried to do as many of the things I'd missed out on as I possibly could. I walked for hours in the forest. I ran on the trails. Kenna, I climbed a tree. I know it's silly, but I'd never done that before. And you know what? It was one of the most amazing things I've ever done. Why didn't you tell me what it was like to climb a tree? Her voice hitched. Now I'm terrified to die. I want this life, but not the old way. I want all the things I've been missing.
I nodded. I knew exactly what she meant. I'm going to make sure you get what you want.
From the woods came a crackle of twigs. I looked up, expecting to see another branch falling, but instead I found a stag with an impressive cradle of antlers striding through the trees, less than 10 feet from us. I didn't think, didn't hesitate. It was like that night in the basement all over again. Instinct took over, only this time instinct didn't lead me to cull everything in sight. Only the stag. I thrust out my hands, and my vino whipped from my palms and attached to the stag. It moaned like the hull of an old ship hitting rough water as its anima siphoned into me. I wanted to hold on to the anima, to experience what it was like to be the stag, this regal, dignified creature, all power and purpose and nobility. But this anima was not for me. I culled until the stag was sapped, its body a withered carcass that fell to the forest floor with a hollow thunk, like a heavy sack of flour being dropped. I didn't realize until I turned my attention back to Erin that she was saying my name, saying it again and again in horror. Kenna, no! Please stop!
Her eyes were wide, and she was trying to sit up, to scoot away from me. She cried out as she jarred her broken wrist. Distantly, I was aware that she was afraid of me, repulsed by me. But with the stag's anima blanketing my mind, I couldn't be concerned.
Give me your hand, I said.
My voice sounded like wind blowing through an old house, low and resonant. Instead, Erin yanked her good hand away, so I planted both of my hands flat on her chest and pushed with all my might, as though trying to shove my way through a stuck door. The strands attached to her like IV tubes, and anima poured from my body to hers. She released a hissing gasp, her eyes bulging from her head, light surrounding her whole body. Her back arched and her legs convulsed, and her gasp became a scream. I saw her change before my eyes, watched her hair thicken and her skin go from chalky pale to a warm honey glow. Her muscles filled out and her wrists straightened, and all the while she screamed. And then, silence. It was over. The glow around her body faded, and inside I felt dark as a cave. Erin sat up abruptly. She shot to her feet and I stood too, watching as she ripped her arm from the sling. Then she charged at me in fury and shoved me hard.
I told you to stop! Why didn't you listen?
I was breathless, my mind spinning like a top right before it goes out of control.
It worked. Your arm, all of you. I healed you.
To show me her arm was healed, she shoved me again.
Why didn't you stop?
She was crying now, and I was bewildered.
You said you'd rather die than go back to being sick. I didn't know how it would be. I didn't know you'd do that.
She pointed an accusing finger, not at me, but at the corpse of the deer.
You were hurting it. It was horrible, Kenna. Is that what you did while you were at Eclipse? Killed animals? Sucked the life out of them like you did to Jason Dunn?
I inhaled a sharp breath and shook my head rapidly.
No. No, of course not. I don't believe you.
Voices from the woods. My mom calling our names. She must have heard Erin shout. Erin pushed me again, lighter this time, not to hurt me or knock me down. It was like she was lashing out, only in defeat.
I can't let you do that to me again, she told me. I was wrong. I want to live, but not like this. Not like you.
My sister whirled around and ran from me.
Erin, wait!
I charged after her. Through the trees, I saw two figures with flashlights. Erin threw herself into my mom's waiting arms and started sobbing. Blake headed straight for me.
What happened? He asked. Why is she crying?
I opened my mouth to explain about the deer, and then closed it again and shook my head. The emptiness in me was all-consuming. I needed to take anima, and I knew I couldn't do it with Blake watching, not after Erin's reaction. Her words cut me as sharp as any knife. I want to live, but not like this. Not like you.
We'll talk later, I said to Blake.
my voice coming out flat and deflated. There's something I have to do. I walked to the river, culling plants along the way, but for some reason their anima didn't satisfy me the way the anima at Eclipse had. Maybe that was because I had so recently culled a much more potent source of anima, and now everything in comparison seemed inadequate. What I wanted was another stag, to be filled with anima that made me feel mighty, formidable, to taste that experience again, if only temporarily. But Aaron was right. What I had done to that deer was horrifying. Necessary, but still it must have come as a shock to her to witness it firsthand. I must have seemed like a monster, every bit as repellent as the moth creature I'd imagined in the forest. Would she ever see me the way she used to? Would my own twin turn away from me now that she knew what I was? She'd brought up Jason Dunn when she railed at me, so she had figured it out. She knew I had killed him. I sank down by the bank of the river and bent to look at myself in the water. The moon was behind me, and the water reflected its light like a mirror. The smell of pine and the mossy scent of river water perfumed the air. I thought of the day I'd found Clint Eastwood's kittens, their bodies limp and their fur matted with mud, and Clint Eastwood's body, mutilated, her head missing entirely. To this day, Aaron still didn't know what Jason had been, but now she knew what I was, and she hated it. A cloud moved over the moon, turning the river dark. A drop of cold water landed on one side of my nose, and more peppered my cheeks and forehead. Seconds later, a deluge began. I stood and ran back toward my house. I'd just entered the barren perimeter of trees when a flashlight beam stopped me in my tracks.
Kenna, is that you?
It was Blake. I stopped running. He didn't have an umbrella or a raincoat, and his hair was plastered to his head, his t-shirt drenched and sticking to his skin. Blake lowered the flashlight so it wasn't shining in my eyes.
I know you wanted to be alone, but I got worried when it started to rain.
It's okay, I said, hugging myself to keep warm. I'm finished out here.
You're shivering. Come on, let's get inside.
I didn't move.
How's Aaron?
He hesitated.
She's freaked out, but your mom is handling her. She's just happy whatever you did worked.
I clenched my fists, my palms slick with rain. It worked, but if Aaron wouldn't allow me to heal her again, then ultimately it wouldn't matter. Unless I forced anima on her. I could do that, sneak into her room while she was sleeping and dose her with a little anima every day. Maybe that would be enough to keep her healthy. Maybe I didn't need to cull such potent anima to sustain her.
I didn't know. All I knew was that Aaron was disgusted with me, and it made me feel disgusted with myself, too.
Blake tried to take my arm to pull me in the direction of the house, but I yanked away. I could feel the anima flowing inside him like a self-contained river, and I wanted it. I wanted him. I didn't know what I was doing. One second I was pulling away from him, the next I had knocked the flashlight from his hand. It fell to the ground, pointing away from us. Then I grabbed the back of his neck and pulled his mouth to mine. For a moment, he was too stunned to react, but when he did, there was none of the politeness that had been present in our first kiss. This one was all fervor and need. Rain poured down our faces, caught in our lashes, and wet our lips. I relished the feel of Blake's mouth moving on mine, and the sense of anima flowing just on the other side of his skin. His lips tracked down over my rain-drenched chin to my neck. He kissed my collarbone. My fingers disappeared in his hair. I drew him down on the soggy ground on top of me. The forest floor was soft with the ash of crumbled trees, silty like the dust from a moth's wing. And there were moth wings beneath us. Hundreds, thousands of them. They blanketed the ground like fall leaves. Blake hesitated, refusing to put his full weight on top of me. He looked bewildered, eyes wild, breathing as hard as if he'd just finished a marathon. I yanked him down again, needing to feel his anima.
"We can't, you know," he said,
knuckling his forehead in a way that made him seem too young, too innocent to be doing this.
"We won't. I just want to be close to you," I said. "As close as I can be."
He bowed over me and grazed my lips softly with his, holding back. But I needed more urgency. I needed more need. I rolled him over and straddled him so I could be in control, and found myself pinning him with his elbows over his head as I crushed my mouth down on his. I moved my hands to my chest, planted my palms there. A memory flashed into my mind. Images, fragmented perceptions. Jason Dunn's empty eyes, my hand grabbing his arm. A vein of energy reaching out from the center of my palm to connect me to him, so I could drink his life. His light. I sat up, rain pouring down my back, blinking at my hand still flat on Blake's chest. The dropped flashlight pointed into my eyes, seeming accusatory. A tickling sensation had started in the center of my palms, hair-thin strands of my vena uncoiling like tenuous bridges. I shot to my feet and Blake sat up, dazed, chest heaving.
"What's wrong? Did I do something?"
I backed away from him, holding up my hands as if to ward him off like a wolf I'd happened upon in the woods. "Stay away from me, Blake," I told him. "You're my best friend, and I love you. But stay the hell away from me." Splinters and Stains. When the doorbell rang the next morning, I knew before answering that it would be Blake. The rash of texts I'd received from him since I'd left him last night foretold of his visit. He lifted the black guitar case he carried by his side.
"I thought you might want this back now that you're home."
"Oh, right. Thanks." I hadn't even thought about the guitar since I got home. My mind was still struggling to wake up from the dream that was Eclipse. I felt like I'd been ripped from the deepest sleep. The rain had ceased sometime during the night, and morning dawned bright as sunflowers, although no amount of sunlight could turn the land around my house into anything other than a circle of depressing gray. How could gray have ever been my color? It was a miserable color. But then I'd been a miserable person. That had changed at Eclipse, and now I felt the pull of that place like a tide drawing me back. I missed my other bed, missed my room with its pot-bellied stove and my mom's antique guitar, even though I had to keep it hidden beneath my bed, where it still lay. I missed the calyptra, and the air that seemed to carry every scent and sound farther than the air in the rest of the world. If someone were baking bread inside Eclipse House, I could smell it from the field. If someone sang in the orchard, I could name every note. Even the sky there seemed different, deeper and bluer and more dramatic, regardless of whether my view of it was enhanced by anima. "Want some coffee?" I asked Blake, raising my mug. I'd always drunk it black, the sharpness of its taste almost like a daily punishment for my past mistakes. But now I was used to Hitomi's tea blends, and in comparison the coffee tasted too bitter. Or maybe it was just me who was bitter. I'd done time in paradise and come home to a dead forest, a dying sister, and a mom who felt like someone I'd never met. But there was still Blake. Even though I knew he'd be better off without me in his life, I wanted him in my life. Like twins, we balanced each other out, finished each other. He was my light and I was his darkness. But in the end, maybe that just created more gray.
"No thanks," he said to my offer of coffee.
He set the guitar case down on the porch.
"Can we talk?"
he asked, squinting in the sunlight. He'd forgotten his sunglasses, and I could see his eyes were bleary, red-lidded. He looked like he hadn't slept. I hadn't either. Too many thoughts twisting and tangling inside my brain like fast-growing vines. We sat on the porch, keeping several inches between us. So much for not reverting back to old patterns. "I'm sorry about last night," I said. "I didn't know what I was doing." He entwined his fingers, keeping his eyes on his knees.
"No, I'm glad you stopped us. I mean, it's not like I don't want to, you know. But we didn't have protection, and it was muddy and raining and..."
He shook his head.
"It just wasn't how I imagined it should be with us. Not that I thought there'd be silk sheets and chocolate strawberries or anything, but, well, you know."
Blotches of red appeared on his neck, and he cleared his throat and adjusted his collar like it was too tight. I stared at him, uncomprehending, until it hit me. He thought I was talking about sex. He had no idea that when we were kissing, I'd been a hair away from taking his anima. And if I'd started to do that, I had no idea if I could have stopped. Then I would have added one more dead person to the list of people I'd culled, only this time it would have been someone I loved.
Blake, I said, my stomach filling with acid. I have to tell you something.
I started with the truth. I killed a boy named Jason Dunn. I ended with another truth. I almost killed Blake. In between, I did my best to leave out no details. Rebecca would be furious if she found out what I told him, but I felt like I owed him an explanation. Besides, if there was one person in the world I trusted completely, it was Blake, and it was time he understood who I really was. Then he could decide for himself whether he wanted someone like me in his life. So that's it, I said after talking for over an hour with few interruptions from Blake. My coffee was now cold and more bitter than ever. I finished it anyway and cringed, setting the mug aside. I've never told anyone else. He looked at me, and the expression on his face made me want to sink into the ground. In his eyes, I saw what I always feared I would see if someone knew the truth. Revulsion. It was fleeting, but I saw it in the downward turn of his mouth and the pinch of his eyes. Then Blake covered his face with his hands, dragging them down over his cheeks.
You were just a kid, he said. You didn't know what you were doing.
I did know, I insisted. He was bad. He made my sister suffer, so I decided to make him pay for it. It was murder, Blake, and it was intentional. I might as well have put Jason in a killing jar of my own. I am a killing jar, Blake. A living, breathing killing jar. And I almost put you inside, too.
Blake stared out at the crumbling gray woods.
You want to go back to Eclipse?
He said, speaking my thoughts for me in a voice that sounded weary and defeated.
I don't know what I want.
After all those truths, I was starting with the lies again. I knew exactly what I wanted. Blake stood and turned to me. His expression morphed from betrayal to heartbreak to loss, finally arriving at anger.
You may not know what you want, but I do, he said. I want you here with me. When you decide that's where you belong, I'll be waiting.
He shoved his hands in his pockets and walked away, his shoulders hunched and his head bowed slightly. It was the posture of someone trying to protect himself, and that's why I didn't run after him or call him back. I'd hurt him too much already. I didn't want to hurt him anymore. I didn't want to hurt anyone. I picked up my guitar case and went back inside the house, with the intention of holding up in my room and practicing some of the Calyptra songs I'd learned. I didn't want to forget them. It occurred to me that I hadn't written any new music since I'd gone to Eclipse, and that I didn't actually feel any need to. I only wanted their music now. My own was too dark, too mournful. I wanted the brightness and vivacity of Calyptra rhythms, the bone-rattling throb of Calyptra drum beats. But my mom waited for me in the foyer. Her eyelids were red, so I guessed she'd been crying.
We need a family meeting, she said.
Her voice just raspy enough to confirm that, yes, she had definitely been crying. I sighed, my body sagging. I felt so tired I could barely stay upright. I needed to take Anima soon. At Eclipse, I was constantly sampling Anima. I rarely went more than a few hours without it.
Can it wait? I asked.
She shook her head. She looked even more tired than I felt.
Now would be better. There are things we need to resolve.
Resigned, I set my guitar down in the foyer and followed her to the dining room, where Aaron was already seated at the table. I sat across from my sister, who kept her eyes trained on the surface of the table, as though it were the most interesting thing she'd ever seen. I tried to get her to look at me, but she only drew more tightly into herself like a potato bug. Her rejection did more than sting. It crushed. It flattened me like roadkill, and it pissed me off. I had saved her. I'd healed her broken, useless prison of a body, and this was how she treated me. I folded my arms over my chest, clenching my fists and glaring at her so she would feel my anger, even if she didn't see it in my eyes.
So,
Mom cleared her throat, glancing between the two of us.
Our family has been through hell. I think we can all agree on that. But I have a feeling the worst is behind us now. Don't you, girls?
Aaron ignored her. I raised an eyebrow and waited for her to get this over with.
As we move forward, we need to establish some guidelines, she went on.
Mom launched into what was clearly a prepared speech. I tried to listen, but at some point I became fixated on her hands. I couldn't stop looking at them. They were identical to Rebecca's, the fingers long and slender. How could my mom have betrayed Rebecca the way she did? How could she abandon a mother who loved her so much that she built a new world for her? Rebecca had given her a freaking utopia, and she had shunned it. What was wrong with this woman? "Kenna, are you listening?" Mom said. I raised my eyes. "Yep. Keep Aaron healthy, but don't cull animals, only plants. Keep what I am a secret. Never do what I do in public. I got it." "Do I even get a say in this?" Aaron asked, finally looking up. Her chin thrust out defiantly. She looked beautiful and strong, and I hardly recognized her. Mom's brow furrowed in confusion. "Aaron, you understand that we don't really have a choice in all this. If you want to stay healthy, you have to let Kenna help you." "Then maybe I don't want to stay healthy. Maybe I wasn't meant to be healthy." "Honey," Mom said, trying to maintain a reasonable tone, though I could tell she was panicking inside. "You don't mean that."
"I don't? Tell me, why is it so important for Kenna to save me now? How long has she been able to do this thing she does? Her whole life? And only now you want her to start playing witch doctor to me?"
I raised my eyebrows at Aaron. I had never heard her speak to our mom with such venom in her tone. "She makes a good point," I said. "I've been wondering the same thing myself." Mom looked helplessly from me to Aaron, and then lowered her eyes.
I told you in the car, Kenna. I made a mistake, and I realize that now. I should have taken you to Eclipse a long time ago, but I was afraid."
"Afraid of what?"
Aaron and I asked in unison. Mom shook her head, her hair hanging around her face. I saw a tear drop from her eye and land on the table.
"That you would turn out like me. That you would be too weak to control your gift."
Cold fingers of dread traced my spine. "What did you do, Mom?" She didn't answer, only shook her head, more tears dripping onto the table. I should have felt pity for her, but instead, disgust writhed through me like a serpent. I stood abruptly, my chair shrieking across the hardwood.
"You don't even want me here. The only reason you sent Blake to pick me up was because Aaron needed me. Otherwise, you would have left me to Eclipse forever."
My mom looked at me like I'd slapped her, raising her head and blinking in stunned surprise.
"That's not true. I only wanted to give you time. You know why I couldn't stay there with you, why it was dangerous for me to bring you home. I also know how easy it is for you to turn your back on family. You did it to your own mother. You were the only real family she had, and you just abandoned her, the same way you abandoned me." "You think that was easy?"
She stood to face me, but when she spoke, her voice was trembling.
"Nothing about what I did back then was easy, Kenna, so don't accuse me of things you don't understand. I left because I wanted a real life, a decent life, and I want the same thing for you."
"No," I said. "You want me to be something I'm not. You want me to be normal and safe and mundane, but guess what? I'm never going to be, but lucky you, I can keep Aaron alive and healthy, so you can have a normal daughter after all."
I hated myself for the things I was saying, but I couldn't stop. So many unsaid words had built up inside me, and now it was all pouring out like lava, consuming everyone in his path. Aaron stood too, glaring at me as though I were the lowest thing on the planet. A worm, a fungus, a virus.
"And whose fault is it that I was born defective, Kenna?" she said. "Is it a coincidence that I shared a womb with you and came out sick? Is it a coincidence that Mom almost died before she could bring us to term? Or does it all revolve around you?"
"Aaron, don't," Mom said. "Please stop."
"No,"
Aaron said sharply.
"Kenna needs to know what she did to us."
My mouth opened, but all of my harsh words had dried up and blown away. My heart, too, seemed to have shriveled in my chest. Ilya had told me Calyptra didn't have children because if they did, they lost their gift. The only reason Rebecca had been able to have my mom was because she'd given birth before she became Calyptra. But she hadn't said anything about this. Was it true? Had I nearly killed my mom and Aaron simply by existing? My sister, my twin, fixed her eyes on mine.
You ruined me, she said. So don't act like you're doing me any favors by saving me now. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have needed saving. If it weren't for you...
She hesitated, but only for a moment.
We'd all be better off.
My brain went numb. My skin felt as cold as a corpse's, and I started to shake. I didn't argue with Aaron because I didn't disagree. Instead, I nodded, turned my back on my family, and walked out. I grabbed my guitar case in the foyer and headed toward my bedroom, wanting to be alone. But then I found myself standing at the foot of the stairs that led down into our unfinished basement. I hadn't been down there since this whole nightmare began. I told myself I would never go into the basement again, but my feet had different ideas. They moved me forward and down, into the darkness. It's not easy to get blood out of cement. Cement is porous. It absorbs. It stains. It keeps. Someone had tried to clean the blood from the storage room in our basement where Thomas Dunn had killed my family. The blood itself was gone, but the stain remained, a permanent shadow cast by the night's events, a permanent bruise on our lives. I stepped into the room and set my guitar case down. It smelled metallic, like pennies. All of the boxes and odd bits of furniture that had been stored inside were gone. It was just an empty, tainted room now. I moved to the one corner of the little room where blood hadn't reached, and sat down with my guitar case laid on my legs. My fingers traced the lyrics I'd scrawled on the case in silver pen. Ghosts crowd the young child's fragile eggshell mind, the doors. I love you. I'm not gonna crack. Nirvana. There's someone in my head, but it's not me. Pink Floyd. Why had I chosen these scraps of lyrics? They had spoken to me, but that had been another version of me. These words were so hopeless, so dark. I wished I could wash them away and start with new lyrics. Bits of the Calyptra songs, which were the kind of optimistic poetry I had never before imagined myself writing. And no wonder I had been depressed. Not only had I murdered a kid, but by simply existing I had destroyed my twin's body and nearly killed my own mother. I unsnapped the brass clasps on the case and opened it, revealing my acoustic guitar. I lifted it out, cradled it in my arms like a sleeping child. For the last 7 years, when I'd been unable to touch anyone, I had held on to this guitar. When I was so lonely I could barely stand it anymore, I had my music. I began to play, brushing the strings, arching my fingers to form chords. I sang, but my voice came out hollow and toneless. I hadn't taken enema yet today, and I felt vacant, like my soul had taken a vacation from my body. You shouldn't be down here. My hands froze on the strings. Aaron stood in the doorway, her face pale as though she might throw up. Her eyes were wide open, staring at the broad stain on the cement. I figured this was the one place where no one would come looking for me. Not that you'd want to see me. I'm sorry for what I said up there, Aaron said, holding up her hands and shaking her head miserably. I was upset, and everything just poured out. I'm sorry I ruined your life. She looked stricken. You didn't, she said, but there wasn't much conviction to her words. We both knew they weren't true. Aaron, seriously, it's okay, I told her, but my hand clenched involuntarily on the guitar strings until I felt them cutting into my fingers. I'd rather know the truth. When did Mom tell you? I asked. She didn't tell me anything, Aaron said. I analyzed the facts and I guessed. I guessed right. She shrugged. But it's not like it's your fault, Kenna. You are what you are. You didn't choose to be born this way. A monster. A killer. No. I was Calyptra. Rebecca had told me there was no shame in what we were, and that was what I wanted to believe. But it was getting harder to do that with every passing hour. I nodded. Now that we're all on the same page, it makes my decision easier, I almost said, and then stopped myself. It's something I can deal with, I finished. Aaron hung her head. She picked at a loose string on one sleeve. I feel like I've lost you, she said in a quiet, defeated voice.
I swallowed what felt like a wet sock jammed down my throat. You haven't lost me. We're just different, like you said. I was born the way I am, and you were born the way you are. We didn't get much choice in the matter. We're kind of the worst twins ever, you know. She laughed dryly at this.
Yeah, we're the worst.
Her laughter died off quickly, and an uncomfortable silence stretched between us. I had never once in my life felt uncomfortable around my twin. Maybe she had lost me a little bit, or we had lost each other. If Erin didn't need me to keep her alive, if, that was, she would ever let me, would it even matter if I disappeared into Eclipse forever? I cleared my throat. I need to be alone, okay? I have a lot to think about.
Okay.
She sniffed, turned around, and I knew she was crying. She paused but didn't look at me as she said,
You should check out Blake's blog. It might remind you of what you've been missing.
When I was alone again, I sat for a long time, clutching my guitar, my muscles straining with tension until they trembled. I stared at the bloodstain on the floor, my teeth clenched. My problems hadn't started here, but this room, with its stain that wouldn't wash off, was a perfect metaphor for my life. I stood abruptly, holding my guitar by the neck. Then I swung it over my head and smashed it into the wall. The strings twanged and the wood snapped and cracked like the trunk of a falling tree. I beat the instrument against the wall until it splintered into 100 pieces, and then I fell to my knees among its remains and grasped them, squeezed them into my palms until they pierced skin and blood welled up around sharp shafts of wood. I wanted to cry, but instead I bled. For a long time I only knelt there, watching my palms fill with crimson, thinking there was nothing I could do to wash away the stain. The only way to escape it was to leave. Anya. My mom knocked on my bedroom door around midnight, which was late for her. She woke at 5 a.m. every day to drive to her bakery, so her standard bedtime was a sensible 10 p.m. Sensible. That had always been a word I used to describe my mom, but now she made no sense to me. Why would she leave Eclipse for this? Why would she have children when she knew it would strip her of her power and might even kill her? I remembered the message Joanna had given me to deliver to my mom. Tell her she was right and I was wrong. Tell her I wish I'd come with her. I wish it more than I can ever say. Why did Joanna wish that? What was I missing? It was then I remembered, too, what Joanna had told me about my mom's guitar, that there was something hidden inside it. So much had happened since my hurried departure from Eclipse that I'd forgotten all about this new revelation. Mom sat on the edge of my bed. She seemed drained of energy, like she hadn't slept in days. I thought idly how much better I could make her feel with a small infusion of anima, but I had a feeling she would decline an offer to help her even if I made it. I was afraid that you would turn out like me, that you would be too weak to control your gift. That was what she'd said during our disastrous family meeting. But what exactly did that mean? Had my mom been unable to handle her need for anima? Had she let it overwhelm her like I had almost done? Had she hurt someone like I had, and been unable to forgive herself? Something about this sounded extremely plausible, and it explained why Mom would go to such drastic measures to rid herself of her gift. But had she known what the risk would be to her life? I had my laptop open on my legs. It felt uncomfortable to be using technology again, like I was breaking some kind of rule. She glanced at the screen and saw a window open to Blake's art blog. She squinted at the screen. Is that you, riding an ostrich?
Yeah.
Blake had been busy while I was away. He'd drawn more than 12 insanely intricate panels dedicated to the extraterrestrial ostrich story he'd been inspired to create while we sat in his forerunner at Folk Yeah Fest. I'd forgotten all about it. That day seemed like it had happened in a past life. Blake had made me the alien ostrich leader, a gray-haired warrior girl who rode on a silver-armored ostrich and wielded a guitar that doubled as a machine gun. The drawings were insane and wonderful, and they'd garnered more comments than any of Blake's other works to date. And, I was pleased to see, there wasn't a single troll among the commenters. Blake had titled the series The Gray Girl, and included a dedication. To Kenna, my reluctant muse, my music guru, and my best friend. When I'd read the dedication, tears had sprung to my eyes. Blake was the best. He really was. I didn't deserve a friend like him, much less a boyfriend. Not that he was my boyfriend, even though last night I had practically mauled him in the woods. Now I wasn't sure we were even friends anymore, not after this morning. A lump formed in my throat at the thought. I can't believe I'm admitting this, but I miss your gray hair, Mom said. I closed the laptop. Things change, I said. That I know, she said softly. She twisted her hands on her lap, gazing at my empty guitar case. I saw what's left of your guitar in the basement. Are you okay? I looked at my hands. Where the splinters from my busted guitar had pierced them, there was now unbroken, pristine skin. I'd taken Anima after my little freak-out, and had healed them. But I didn't think she was asking whether I was physically okay. You should have told me, I said. About why Aaron has always been so sick. About why you had us in the first place. Kenna, what good would that have done? You couldn't help what you were, or what you were doing. But you could have, I said. I could have done many things differently, but I didn't. My mom lowered her eyes, and for a moment I thought she was going to cry. Instead, she took a deep breath and sighed it out. I knew that having you and Aaron would be a risk, but a necessary risk. Did you even want us? I asked. Or were we just a means to an end? I don't know how to answer that, Kenna. I was your age when I made the decision. I couldn't see far enough into the future to gauge what the consequences would be. But once I had you and Aaron, I knew I wanted you even more than I wanted to be Calyptra. I wanted to live in the real world with you, not in some forever daydream. So I made my choice, and I'm willing to live with the consequences. I shook my head at her. I don't buy it. You don't buy what? That you just decided to leave one day. There's something you're not telling me. I changed track suddenly, catching her off guard. Joanna left a message for you. I told her what Joanna had said, and watched as hope and pain warred on her face. Who was Joanna to you back then? I asked. What did you and she have planned that she didn't follow through on? For a moment, I thought my mom would refuse to answer. Her expression closed and became unreadable, and her eyes traveled the room as though searching for a safe place to land. After a long moment, she looked at me with such sadness that I felt it infect me like a flu, making my skin chill and my stomach churn. There is what I thought Joanna was, and what she actually was. I thought she was my soulmate. I thought she loved me, and I knew I loved her. We made plans to leave Eclipse together. But when the time came to actually do it, she balked and refused. It was too late for me to turn back then. I was already pregnant, and she knew it. She'd gone with me to Rushing and helped me choose my target. I thought I would have to try multiple times with several different men, but I got pregnant the very first time. Joanna, she didn't, but she was with me every step of the way, right up until it counted. Mom's mouth quirked in a forlorn smile. Turns out there is a big difference between a lover and someone who loves you. I blinked at her once, the truth hitting me harder than I'd expected. Despite the rumors that had always wandered through town, people speculating on whether or not my mom was gay, I'd never really taken the notion seriously. Though she was beautiful, my mom seemed sort of asexual to me. But now another layer had peeled back, revealing the core of the person hidden deep inside her. Does it bother you? Mom asked when I didn't say anything. I quickly shook my head. No, I'm a little, well, it's a lot to take in. I understand. She stood abruptly, crossing her arms over her chest, seeming vulnerable with this new truth out in the open. You need a new guitar, she said, trying to change the subject. We should go shopping in Portland this weekend. It'll help get your mind off things. I played your guitar when I was at Eclipse, I told her. Joanna said you would have wanted me to have it. My guitar. Her gaze became distant and slightly confused, as though she were recalling a memory that made her as sad as it did happy. Rebecca wouldn't let me take it when I left. She said she was going to burn it. But she didn't, I said. Maybe she's changed. You did. Rebecca isn't made of the stuff that changes. Then why did she tell me I could come back to Eclipse whenever I want? Mom blinked at me. She did. I nodded, and her hand went to her lips, her eyes moving back and forth, as though she were reading invisible text floating in the air. Then her eyes focused on me. I know I haven't always been the kind of mother you wanted, but I'd like to change. I have been thinking a lot about this, and I decided the whole family needs a fresh start. A new house, a new city. Erin started applying to colleges, and it turns out she's eligible for all kinds of scholarships. We could go anywhere in the country. How about the East Coast? The East Coast, I said, stunned. What about your bakery? I'll expand, she said, shrugging. But I wasn't really concerned about Mom's bakery, even though it was her pride and joy, and every time I'd ever asked her if she wanted to open more locations, she'd balked, claiming she liked the idea that there was only one in the whole world. No, what I was thinking about was what was really going on here, my mom wanting to put distance between Eclipse and me. I know it's sudden, my mom said, but I don't think we can stay in this house after everything that's happened. She was right about that. I couldn't live in this house. But the East Coast was not the alternative I had in mind. It'll be good for you and Erin to live someplace where no one knows you, she continued. We can start over. That was the same thing Rebecca had said to me my first night at Eclipse. Tomorrow you start over. And I had. I wasn't ready to do it again. I liked who I was at Eclipse. I wanted to be that person, not the wreck of a person I'd been since I got home. When is all of this happening? I asked, clenching my fists until my nails dug into the meat of my palms. We should start packing tomorrow, Mom said. My lips parted and a shocked breath escaped. Tomorrow? I repeated, wishing I'd heard her wrong. That's too soon. Why wait? She said. We should move before summer's over so you can enroll in time for the start of your senior year. But what about the house? You'll have to sell, and that could take months, if anyone will even buy it at all after what happened here. I had her there. I almost smiled in triumph. Then she shook her head, and my relief turned to dread. I've already had offers from people who want to study what happened to the land, and I've been getting calls from news programs willing to pay very well for an exclusive interview with me. I'll call the highest bidder and tell her I changed my mind. But you can't tell the truth, I argued. You'll have to lie on national television. It's not like I'll be under oath. She sighed. Besides, I've been lying to you and Erin your whole lives. What does it matter if I lie to the rest of the world? I gritted my teeth until I felt they might shatter. You can't do this to me, I said, tears of anger and frustration beginning to leak from the corners of my eyes. I wiped at them furiously, and then gave up and let them flow. I shouldn't hide what my mom was doing to me. She ought to know how she was destroying what little hope for happiness I had left. Mom moved to leave. I really do think this is the best thing for us. She didn't meet my eyes when she said it. Welcome home, Kenna. She closed the door behind her. I sat there for a long moment, tensed and trembling with fury. A sob perched in my throat like a cough. Mom was the one who'd abandoned me at Eclipse, who had introduced me to their way of life, and now she was willing to move the whole family to a different city just to keep me away. Why? Who were the Calyptra that my mom feared me becoming like them? I needed to understand. I opened my laptop and closed the window to Blake's blog, and then opened a new Google browser and searched Eclipse Moth Mythology. I didn't come up with much, but there was a Wikipedia page that talked about Calyptra moths, a genus of vampire moths that fed on blood and tears. The Eclipse moth was mentioned briefly. The page said that the Eclipse moth, if there were any evidence of its existence, would be included in the same family as Calyptra. The eclipse moth was featured in certain Central and South American and Native American myths and legends, and was sometimes worshipped as a goddess. Brujas in Mexico referred to her only as La Madre, the Mother. The only other source of information I found was an online compendium of mythical beasts and monsters. The entry for the eclipse moth said it lurked deep in forests and supposedly grew to enormous size, drank human blood, and was said to bestow a wondrous gift upon those who worshipped it, the ability to consume the breath of life and see beyond the veil that separates the physical world from the spiritual. It also mentioned that the eclipse moth was elusive, but that it couldn't resist a combination of blood and fire. I shuddered. There was an illustration beside the paragraph with information about the eclipse moth, depicting a moth the size of a small house, hovering over a naked woman bound to a wooden stake. Her wrists were slit, streaming blood, and the moth's tongue extended toward one wound. A circle of worshippers knelt around the feeding moth, bowing in supplication. I slammed my laptop shut, but the image stayed behind my eyes like a camera flash. The moth in the illustration was much larger than the one I had hallucinated in the forest, but still, a moth that grew to enormous size. Could it really be a coincidence? Maybe I'd read about the eclipse moth at some point, and my mind had hallucinated it when I'd overdosed on midnight glory anima. I shook my head and forced a laugh. It was silly to take anything seriously that I read on a website that looked like it had been designed by a Swedish death metal band. I tried to wipe the memory of that illustration from my mind, but the image lingered like a song that you can't get out of your head. I needed to replace it with something else, a song I wanted to hear. I needed to see the Calyptra before my mom stole me away to the other side of the country, and I didn't have a lot of time left. I crept to my bedroom door and opened it a crack to peer down the hall toward my mom's bedroom. There was no light shining from beneath her door. She must have gone to sleep. I slipped into the hall, walked softly to Aaron's room, and knocked so lightly I barely made a sound. Aaron and I had never knocked on each other's doors before, but things had changed. I didn't feel comfortable walking into her room unannounced anymore, and I'd a feeling she wouldn't be cool with that either. The light in Aaron's room was off, but I heard her bed creak, and a moment later she opened the door a few inches. She saw it was me and hesitated to open it farther. She simply stared at me, eyes large and expectant, and more than a tad wary. I sighed, feeling heavy and out of place. Yes, things had definitely changed. "I need a favor," I said, and was relieved when she opened her door wider to allow me inside. She turned on her bedside lamp and crossed her arms over her chest. "What is it?" she asked. I bit my lip and released it. "I have to go back." She raised an eyebrow. "To Eclipse?" I nodded. "Tonight. Just for a day." "Why?" she asked, her tone defiant, but I could tell by the resigned look in her eyes that she already knew the answer. "Mom told me about this whole moving thing. I need to say goodbye to the Calyptra. I don't know how long it will be before I see them again." "Then let me come with you," Aaron said, dropping her arms to her sides. "I want to see where Mom came from. And I want to meet our grandmother." "But she doesn't want to meet you," I almost said before biting back the words in time. "No," I said firmly, and felt a pang of regret for my tone when Aaron wilted. "I'm sorry," I told her more gently. "This is something I have to do alone." "Then why are you telling me?" she asked. I took a breath and let it out, bracing myself for another bout of resistance from my twin. "I need you to convince Mom not to come after me." Aaron shook her head. "What makes you think she'll listen to me? It's not like I can play the dying wish card anymore." I winced at the same moment she did, both of us remembering that Aaron was, indeed, still dying. Or she would be without me to keep her alive. "I'll find a way," Aaron said quietly, lowering her eyes to the floor as if in defeat. "How do you plan to get there?" I cleared my throat. "Well, that's the other thing." Best night ever. My mom owned two cars, one a used Prius, which was what she drove most often, and the other a beat-up Jeep Grand Cherokee that was older than I was. Mom barely drove the Jeep unless she had deliveries or was catering an event. I figured she wouldn't be doing any of that over the next few days, so she wouldn't mind if I borrowed it. At least that's what I decided to tell myself, since my mom was pretty much guaranteed to lose it when she found out I'd gone back to Eclipse. Once I was on the road through the Cross Pine Mountains with rushing behind me, I began to breathe easier. But I couldn't relax. I kept my eyes trained on the road, searching for the turnoff onto the rutted, overgrown path to Eclipse. It was hard to see in the daylight, which meant it would be 10 times harder in the dark. I almost missed the road, and had to slam on the brakes and reverse on the highway. Good thing it was after midnight and there were no other cars in sight. The journey was even bumpier than I remembered it being, and the Jeep's check engine light came on after I'd driven about 5 miles into the wilderness. And shortly after that, it began to